Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Tuesday, the 7th of April.
Coming up today, he's very tall, retired from playing, and learning his ropes on the radio. No, it's not, Donica. We're catching up with Peter Crouch.
Ouch. I've seen 10 million, 15 million pound players written off in one training session. Gerrard and Carragher were ruthless. Like, Gerrard's standards are so high. You know, he would wrap a pass into you with so much venom and expect you to control it, and he would wrap it into me and then come at me, basically. I mean, it happened to me a couple of times where if it bounced off me, he'd just look at you like, what am I playing with?
Can't wait for him. He's a Golf Channel favourite. He's mates with Tiger Woods. We go live to Connor Sketches in Florida.
Just be yourself and play a tour ball made for your game.
Really?
Really.
The softer RX.
Okay, good. The conditions are really, really tough out there.
They're really tough.
Really. Oh, man.
I don't say... Oh.
Plus, we've Tommy Bowen on Fixers and Fatherhood, and it's week two of Retro Tuesday.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much more before Sean and Connor Price perform live for the ISPCC, live at 7 o'clock. You can text us on Game On at 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Marie and Ruby, how are you?
We're good, Donica. I was wondering, was Marie going to turn her mic on there and come in during the intro? I was wondering what was going on.
Just wanted to keep you on your toes there.
And the thing was, I was going to jump in for you, Marie, but it was a line that you're slagging me on. So I was there, I can't say this.
You should have. You're good at slagging yourself.
Yeah,
that's, I'm surprised Ruby didn't actually. It was an opportunity to go straight in with the 2 feet.
Ruthless Ruby.
To, but then I was thinking, well, there's no way Dunica has pre-read it, so I'm definitely not going to read it.
The problem is, I did pre-read it, but I forgot it again, which is worse.
It is. Ruby, Marie, loads of breaking news in sport today. More cancellations everywhere.
Well, big ones for you, isn't there?
Well, big ones for flat racing anyway. The Guineas and the Derby have been... in England, that is, have been postponed from Newmarket and in Epsom in, I suppose, the one in early May, the Guineas. That was always going to go. The Derby's gone in early June. No dates have been set, but the Jockey Club are hoping to run all those races later in the season. But Royal Ascot have said that they would be willing to race behind closed doors if government and the public health policy and the BHA were happy to do so. And that is due to start on June 16th. So... they'll be hoping for a pick-up in the way things are going, but I think it's a bit wishful thinking, to be honest with you.
I know, one that you're probably a bit disappointed. The JP McManus Pro-Am postponed until July 2021. You were shooing for that, yourself and Lee Westwood.
Yeah, I wish. I see that, and I read that it's a complete sellout, wasn't it? And it was all caps, but they're going to be valid again in 2021, so that'll be something to look forward to in 12 months time.
My dad played in the last one. He qualified for it, so he was playing for months and months, I'd say about a year to qualify. Wow. And he think there was 12 teams of just regular people who managed to make it, and he played with Ernie Els and Fred Funk, and he had an absolute brilliant time.
Marie, there was nothing regular about anybody that qualified for that tournament. They were so hooky it wasn't funny.
Maybe.
Really?
Sorry, Lee Westwood,
Westwood, the cheek of slagging jockeys for being well handicapped last night. With all everyone else walking around, people spend years walking back point ones to get themselves into that competition. It was just hooky.
I'm going to be a loyal daughter here now and say absolutely nothing about my dad's handicap, or I'll be in big trouble.
Yeah, right.
He's probably just a competitor. It runs in the family, Marie.
Yeah, he does have an A team.
To drop you, was he?
He has ruthless. An A team and a B team for when he goes off to classics. So I think that'll tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, Ruby, you mentioned that the Retro Tuesday, we're looking at a few incredible favourite GA jerseys from the past, and we've kicked it off on @GameOn2FM on our Twitter account. Just we've a brilliant prize with Mac Sports recovery packs. So they're brilliant packs that have everything you need to get ready to perform.
Did you pick any out, Donica? It's pretty hard for Kildare. Like, white is just white, whatever they do with it.
Oh, I don't know. White's decent. Kildare always have a nice kit. It's a bit like Spurs. Everyone kind of likes it. But for now, I find it hard to look beyond the kind of Cork jersey, kind of 91, Larry Tompkins and Billy Morgan on the touchline, and all it has is Barry T on the front, Cork crest on the side, and guaranteed Irish. That's all you need, isn't it?
Kildare man winning the All-Ireland free, what else would you expect?
Oh, he's in good form today.
He's off.
The UCC jersey is a lovely one. I've seen a few of them, but I have to say, the Offaly jersey from 81-82 is pretty spectacular. A good few people have sent that in to us, and I think it's going to be really hard to top that. So I see there Noel Cahill, Paul Ryan, Pat Nolan were quick off the mark with that one, and it is class.
Yeah, I think any Irish person going away could wear that jersey and just feel patriotic, couldn't they?
I'd wear that now to work.
Marie, you tweeted how many jerseys you have.
Yeah, there's a lot of them at home, all right. A lot of them.
It's ridiculous.
I know.
Did you see this?
Did you just hang around GAA pitches when you were young picking up jerseys? Like
now, a lot of them are Billy's, so that's fair enough. But yeah, he collects a lot of jerseys, all right. But when you've got six siblings as well, you end up getting a lot of jerseys.
I don't know. I think you've a small problem. You're hoarding jerseys there. It's crazy.
Yeah. Is there a phobia for that? What's it called, I wonder?
Spring clean.
51552, if you know what the name is, to put on hoarding jerseys.
But you couldn't throw any of them out. Like, when you just look at them there, like, how would you even part with any of them? Donica, what do you do with yours?
I've kept the ones that are special. There's an awful lot of them to be decided on things to do. So, we've Tommy Bow on later. I know, watching Tommy Bow's documentary, the main thing with rugby is your caps. Where do you keep your caps? And I have a nice little cabinet of mine. Tommy has these in this often. Tommy's got these in his toilet.
A lot of people do that. I've heard that before.
At least you get jerseys or caps. I mean, who wants a pair of breeches? No one can do anything with them. Like, I mean, at least you can wear a jersey or put a cap on your head. Like, here's a pair of breeches for you. What are you going to do? Wear them at Halloween or something?
Well, considering that you don't even like trophies, I'm pretty sure you probably have kept nothing.
Have you kept nothing, Ruby?
I have loads of stuff.
Like what?
Britches that you can't give away.
That's brilliant. Text us in, though. I think Marie has nearly identified one that'll be hard to beat, but your favourite retro jersey to be in with the chance to win a brilliant Max Sport recovery pack. It's got everything you need. It's even got the spiky little ball. Marie, you know the one I'm on about? The recovery
one,
ball.
I know the one. It reminds me of Ruby. Hard and spiky.
Oh,
it Ruby's is. Recovery ball.
That was harsh.
It's true. You don't know how good it is until you use it as well, Ruby, which could be a compliment.
What's that, sticking the knife in me or using the spike ball?
Yeah, so get them in, 51552, your favourite retro GA jerseys. We'd love to hear them.
Well, anyway, Donica, our first guest is someone who's probably a little bit taller than you, maybe not, but he definitely has a bigger personality than you. And that's Peter Crouch. Peter, how are you?
Ruby, yeah, good, mate. Yeah, you?
Yeah, I'll keep him well yourself.
Yeah, all right, not too bad.
How's the podcast going?
Loving it, to be fair. We've finished the last series, but obviously with all this lockdown stuff, we're like, what else are we going to do? We might as well bang out some more.
How are you going for content? We're struggling in the radio. Mate.
Listen, like a gold day. The only thing I'm struggling with is all this technical stuff. I'm trying to set up these Skype calls, all these like Zoom calls, things like that. I'm really struggling with that. It takes me about an hour to set it all up. But once I'm on, it's all good. The content's there.
You should get Ruby on. He's really sound. Great fun. Great crack.
I'd love to have him on. Me and Ruby did something recently. I think, I don't know if he's told you, but he saw me trying to get on a horse. That was something special.
We saw Peter. It was an incredible, and he was quite giving of his time and supportive.
He was ruthless all day.
You know him.
In fairness, I did watch Peter Crouch trying to get on a horse in the yard in Windsor, and the horse did not behave itself. And Peter Crouch was—you definitely brought up my estimation of footballers that you were going to have another go after getting a fall. And yeah, definitely, you were a lot tougher than I thought you'd be.
Do you know what Ruby said to me? He said, "Do not get on that horse." I promise you. I got on it. It threw me off. I was like a cowboy at one stage, trying to stay on this thing. And it threw me off. I landed face first. I think it's the first time I met Ruby. And I was face down on the stable floor. I got back up and said, right there, looked at him thinking, what on earth must he be thinking of me here? Yeah. But yeah, I was going to have another go, but he was like, nah, do not get back on that horse.
Well, he'd tell you pretty quickly what he's thinking of you, that's for sure.
He did that. Listen, he did that.
Peter, to be fair, unless your spleen is hanging out, there's no excuse to get back up in the horse as far as Ruby's concerned.
Yeah, exactly. And Paddy wasn't paying me enough anyway.
I agree with you. I agree with you there. You must renegotiate those contracts.
Peter, it is important, though. Like, obviously, you've scored 22 goals for your country, 42 caps, but I think it's the personality that everyone sees off the pitch, which is a brilliant podcast, and just anything you're always involved in. It's great to see that come out, you know, that you can have both the personality off it and the brilliant footballer on the pitch.
Yeah, that was obviously, like, something. It's gone quite well after, but, you know, you sort of keep yourself to yourself when you're playing your sport, and you know, no one sees the real you. I think as a footballer my whole life, everyone who knows me probably knows that what I'm like, having played football. But when you're so guarded, when you're a Premier League player, and especially playing for England, you know, you say the wrong thing, you always seem to be in hot water. So you try to keep yourself to yourself. But the last couple of years I was playing, I decided to do a book, and I was doing my podcast, and I did various other things. I think people could see, you know, what it was like, and it seemed to go really well. Yeah. So obviously life sort of I just sort of slipped into this media world, and it's all a bit different for me, and it's not what I'm used to. And listen, my first passion is football. That's never going to change. But this stuff's good fun, and I'm enjoying it. So I'm just going to ride it while it lasts.
In a way, do you find that because you've got such a big personality and such a likeable personality, and Donica is the same there as well, that sometimes people focus on that and it's almost like people forget that you were such a prolific goal scorer and such a great footballer as well, that it's the personality they see first?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's a nice thing in some ways. I mean, you know, obviously I'll always have the football side, and that's like I say, that's my passion. You know, no one will be able to take those things away from me, having, you know, represent my country and played at World Cups or whatever I've achieved. I've always, you know, that's been my passion, and I loved doing what I did. But this other side of me, I always look at someone like Gary Lineker. People, you know, I look at Gary Lineker, he's asking people questions, and then people forget that, you know, he was England's record goal scorer for so many years and one of the best centre forwards we've ever had. And I think that's credit to what he's doing. It's just the fact that he's very good at his job, and people see him as a presenter now. So I wouldn't mind if people see me as something else in years to come. It means I've been sort of a success in a different field, which is a good thing.
Peter, taking you back to football, obviously you started with QPR, you were with Villa, Southampton, Liverpool. You played with a lot of clubs. Where did you have the most enjoyment? What club did you enjoy being with most?
Oh, I mean, obviously there was different enjoyment for different reasons, but obviously I grew up in West London, and QPR was my local team, and when I first started there, all my mates used to come and watch me, and obviously we were in the Championship then, and my mates were having fivers and tenners on me for the first goal scorer, and I got 8-9 first goals that year, and I was honestly, every time I got in the players' lounge, it was like I was getting mauled by the lads. They were like, it was the difference between us going out or not going out was me getting the first goal. So I mean, that was just such a fun time. But then on the flip side of that, and obviously it being my local team, it was amazing, you know, friends and family in the crowd. But as a footballer, I think playing for Liverpool, I couldn't. That won't be beaten, you know. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but Liverpool on a Champions League night at Anfield, you know, we played in huge games. I managed to get to the final in 2007, winning the FA Cup with Liverpool. That was something that I grew up on. It was bigger than the Champions League when I was a kid. So to win the FA Cup with Liverpool, I was probably playing the best football of my life. I was playing for England at the time, and I'd have to say that footballing-wise, that was the best.
Peter, I've been lucky enough to have been in a few stadiums in England, and there is nothing quite like Anfield, how close the supporters are to the pitch. They're in on top of you. Is there anywhere else quite like it?
It was a difficult one. Like, obviously, I think Anfield sort of stands out on its own. But I have to say, when we got into the Champions League with Spurs in the old White Hart Lane, and we played... Obviously, Spurs haven't been in the Champions League since it's been since it changed to the Champions League from the European Cup. So that was special getting in there first and foremost, because we beat City to to get fourth position and get in the Champions League. And then we had a roller coaster ride in that time, and we beat Inter Milan at White Hart Lane, and we went away and beat AC Milan in the San Siro. And those nights at White Hart Lane were pretty special as well. And I'd have to say Anfield was unrivaled on European night.
Peter, you give great insight also to the kind of dressing room, and you speak about the special moments for success. But for crack and fun, which stands out for you? Which dressing room would you love to be in for just fun and giddiness?
Portsmouth by far. I think I'd just left Liverpool. I was under Rafa Benitez, and everything was scrutinised. You know, it was all once you'd won a game, you couldn't enjoy it. You were on to the next one because it's such a big club and, there's so much expectation. But I left there under Rafa, who was so intense, and I went and played for Harry Redknapp. And that's not to say it was, any slight on Harry, because we were a top side. I think we just won the FA Cup at Portsmouth, and we finished sixth in the Premier League. I thought add one or two more players and genuinely we would have got in the Champions League. But as a group of lads, it was so much fun being in that dressing room, and because we were winning games and it was all going great, every day was belly laughs, and it was a great place to be.
I was used to ride down, not between Portsmouth and Southampton, or a bit over that direction, in a place called Fontwell, and Harry used to turn up there on the odd Monday. Did you ever go racing with him? No.
Do you know what? No, it would always define his mood, though. After training, you'd get in, and if you knew if he's won his bets or lost his bets by his mood. Every time.
Brilliant. Ruby, you were probably at fault for them having some horrible Mondays.
Probably was, Donegal, but sure, so be it.
Peter, we had Lee Westwood on yesterday, and he was making the point that when sports people want to relax, they go off and play golf, but because he's a golfer, that he can't go and play golf really to take his mind out of it. Just hobbies, do you have any, or what do you do in your spare time?
Yeah, that's it. Obviously, it's different times at the moment, isn't it? I'm not been out much, but yeah, I've been loving the golf. I really have. I've been trying to play as much as I can. Like, I didn't grow up with it. Football and tennis were my games. And I grew up there, obviously playing them constantly. I never grew up with golf, and I just assumed that because I was good at them, I thought I'd be quite natural at all sports. But golf, I just wasn't natural at that at all. But it's one of those things. When you're competitive, you're like, why am I so bad at this? I've just worked so hard to try and get better and better and better. I will get there to the place that I want to be.
Peter, we love listening to your podcast. It gives a real insight to you and your ability mainly to slag yourself. And you share incredible embarrassing moments. And one that stands out was the one with Roy Keane when he saw you in your smart new car.
Yeah, I have. I've told this a few times, but yeah, this is the genuine truth. I knew it wasn't me. I felt like I was doing well. I was playing for England. I was playing for Liverpool. Just come off the back of a decent World Cup and thought, right, I can upgrade my car. Got myself an Aston Martin. I looked at myself in the mirror. I thought, it's not me. I didn't drive it for 4 or 5 days. And then two or three days in, after driving, I thought, yeah, this is a bit of me. Actually, had my arm out the window, had some tunes on, had the sunglasses on. I pulled up in Hale Bars in Manchester and, pulled up alongside Roy Keane. And I thought, I sort of give him the thumbs up. And he looked at me as if I was the most piece of whatever it was on his shoe. And just that one look from Roy was enough for me to sell the car that next that week. I knew I was being ridiculous. It wasn't me. But that look from Roy just confirmed it. I don't even know if he even knows this, but I did sell the car that week. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, a good financial hit to take in a week. A brand new car is not worth as much second hand. Peter, you're obviously involved at the moment in a TV show, Peter Crouch Save Our Summer. It's a one-stop shop entertainment show. How's that going? Yeah. When's it going to start?
We're going to be doing that live, I think, over the course of June. Obviously everything's been cancelled. Glastonbury, Wimbledon, the Euros. Most of the sporting things, all the festivals, the music festivals. So, I'm just trying to bring a bit of fun to to people's summer. You know, even if we're locked down, we're still going to attempt it. God knows how it's going to go. But we'll have a go, and hopefully it'll be a bit of fun and a bit of light-hearted relief, should we say, in these times that we're living in at the minute.
Well, obviously, I can see you replicating or trying to replicate the Euros in your back garden. How exactly are you going to do Glastonbury?
Right, listen, I've got a few mates that are up for doing it, and they're talking about doing gigs in their own back garden, and you know, over Skype or something like that. It has to be. But listen, they're up for doing it. I've got a few bands. I've got a few musicians who are up for or having a go. And listen, if you were headlining a festival and now you're not doing anything, you're sitting there in your back garden, why not have a day out and do it over Skype? We'll just play the whole set out. We'll bang it out.
Peter, you had such a long career and football has changed and is changing all the time. What was the biggest thing that you noticed that was different or what way did it evolve in the most noticeable way?
Well, football's changed so much over the course of my career, definitely. I think the professionalism obviously went up tenfold. I mean, when I first got in, I think it was 2000 when I broke into the QPR team, and there's a lot of older professionals sort of coming towards the end of their career, and I was, you know, one of the, there wasn't many young players in the side. I only had them to look up to, and there was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of, you know, fish and chips after games, and you know, we didn't fly anywhere. There's a lot of coaches and things like that. And obviously, the money that came into the game made the professionalism go up. The training grounds got better, and everything got better. But there was a fine line between it being less professional and more fun, and it probably being professional is amazing. But I think it might have lost something in the dressing room and something with the rivalries and passions in the game now. You know, when I think of the Man United-Liverpool games, we used to kick lumps out of each other, and I think of Man United and Arsenal, those fantastic ties. I just don't see that as much anymore, and that's the only frustration on my part of watching football, is that I just don't see that sort of those games as much anymore, which is a shame. And I know, having just left the dressing room recently, obviously I was in a very good one when I retired at Burnley, but when we went down at Stoke, there was fractions in the dressing room, and it was sad to see. I was so glad that I managed to go to Burnley and sort of get back in a good environment again just before I retired, because it would have left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth having retired at Stoke, because from what we were to what it became was sad to see.
Do you think that there's too much expected of footballers now? Like, there's so much focus, so much spotlight, all social media, the different media outlets we see now. You can't really move without somebody writing about you. Do you think it's too much, and we should maybe give a little bit of leeway?
I don't know, because, you know, what people always seem to harp back on is that you paid very well and you should take it, I suppose. But listen, I played football for 20 odd years, and it was the best thing that, you know, I could have ever hoped for. You know, it's given me the best life. I had the best time going in every single day. And listen, if you have to put up with a bit of scrutiny and a bit of spotlight on you, I think it's the least you can do to deal with it, really, because the game gives you absolutely so much. And, you know, I've got the best memories, and I've led the best life because of it. So for me to sit here and grumble would be sour taste, I think.
You were saying though, Peter, about going professional. Do you think the camaraderie with smartphones, with the social media, the lack of conversation maybe between players, that has been lost as much with guys being so into their phones?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's hard. I never wanted to be a bitter old pro. Do you know what I mean? Like, I tried my best towards the end, and it was hard not to at times. I'd be like, you know, I grew up with playing cards on the bus, and you know, everyone having a chat. And what I remember, certainly in the early days at Portsmouth, when I was, I think I was 20 when I signed there. Everyone had to bring a film, and we'd watch a film all together at the one TV. We were all around it, and we'd, you know, each week a new player would have to bring a film, and then you'd get marks out of 10 and rated. And it was just all a bit of fun, and things like that just stopped, really. And everyone had their own iPads, everyone had their own phones, and people would watch their own films, and it became very solitary. And obviously there was a few of us. I was with the Irish boys mainly at Stoke, keeping the card school alive. It was me, Glenn Whelan, John Walters and Mark Wilson, keeping this card school alive. But yeah, I mean, it's dying out, and it's a bit of a shame, I have to say, without sounding hopefully like a bitter old pro.
No, you're not. I get you as well. I was the same with the way I'm looking around. But do you feel that you got to know your teammates as well in the end as you would have known them early on?
Well, no, that's the shame. And I think obviously I was looking around. I always remember a story. I was playing at Huddersfield, the McAlpine Stadium. I think it's called something else now. But it was right towards the end, and I was warming up with one of the young lads, and he said to me, "Have you ever played here?" And I said, "Yeah, my debut season, I played here, 2000. And he just turned around to me and said, "Oh, quah, I wasn't born." And, you know, I was warming up next to him on the same pitch thinking, I think it might be time for me to say goodbye. I think, yeah. And that was, that's sort of just, because you don't realise, I think, because in football you stay young for so long, you know, all the young lads that come in keep you young, keep your mind fresh, and every day you go into training, you're having a laugh, and you've never really had to grow up. You know, people take care of everything for you, just so you can concentrate on football, and you never really have to grow up. And I think that sort of kept me young. But I miss the dressing room badly, I really do. But I do think it's a different place to when I, certainly to when I began.
Well, everyone has to grow up eventually, Peter, and you have four kids under six. How are you coping with that in these times?
Whoa, that's some achievement.
I'll tell you something, the homeschooling is not going great. My wife's Bagsied the 4-year-old, and I've got the 8-year-old. And
Bagsied.
It's intense. The maths is intense. What I know about the Normans now, you don't need knowing. You don't need to know. Honestly, I know everything about the Normans. 1066, I know the lot.
Yeah, I think history is getting high on everyone's agenda. Peter Crouch, thanks a million for taking our call.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We're all staring at each other here on our screen, wondering who's going to pick up from the ad. The communication is just wonderful this evening.
I actually did nothing there, and I was wondering what was going to happen.
You were just playing. You were,
I was
listening,
testing
you. Listening to Peter Crouch talking about cards. You were playing poker, weren't you?
I was just testing you to see what's going to happen.
I didn't know there was a game going on.
He's good crack, Ruby.
He is good crack, in fairness to him. I must say, even we were making that ad for Paddy Powers, and he'd never ridden a horse, and he was getting up on the horse, and it bucked him off and planked him on the concrete in the yard in Windsor. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like, is he going to get up? Is he going to be
Did you
all
help
right?
him?
Because he's all arms and legs. There's 100 people running towards him to pick him up, and I'm thinking, what are they going to do? He looks at me, and I just said to him, I wouldn't get back on that. No way. And he said, right. So we'd pretend he was getting up on the horse the next time. But I felt so sorry for him. But it did. And yeah, I'm used to looking at soccer players diving here, there and everywhere. But he got properly slapped that day.
Is there outtakes?
No. Thank God there was no outtakes.
Ruby, seeing him on a horse, though, the length of the man. You know what I mean? He's like, his legs would be touching the ground, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but he's a great personality. And obviously he was a very talented footballer, but he's great crack and a real down-to-earth fella.
Yeah. Certainly.
And we do like down-to-earth fellas, and I am delighted to be joined by one now, Conor Moore, a.k.a. Conor's Sketches. I have to say, when someone does really well on the world stage, an Irish person, I really love it, but I like them even more when they poke fun at Ruby Walsh. So, Conor, you are very, very welcome to the show.
Well, this is awkward. Hi, Ruby.
Conor, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Not too bad. You're lucky you left New York by the sounds of it. You're off down in Florida.
I am, yeah. I've been here now the last 6 weeks. You could say I'm trapped down here in a sense, but it's not much of a trapping now. It's the weather's nice at least. But it does seem to be getting a bit more, there's more cases down here or whatever, but stable anyway.
Obviously, you are in New York and Mullingar, Westmeath's a pretty high, lot of cases in Westmeath as well here, Conor. It seems to be following you around a little bit.
Maybe it is. Maybe I'm a jinx. Yeah, it actually did. Mullingar actually got a few cases today or something in New York and Florida. My brother lives in New York as well, so obviously my parents. anyone they're connected to anyway has there's plenty of cases wherever they are. So maybe it is a jinx, a family jinx or something.
We're trying our best not to focus too much on the negative and COVID-19 because it is all around us. And it's an exciting time for people, for some people anyway. And for you are one of them, Conor. There's a lot going on. Just tell us about the new show and what else is coming down the track.
Yeah, we have a new show starting next Tuesday, the 14th of April. It's called The Conor Moore Show and it's on Golf Pass, which is like a digital subscription service of Golf Channel. And it's going to be like, a bit, the best way to describe it, I suppose, is like the Republic of Telly for golf sort of kind of thing. So there's like a monologue and stuff and some sketches and all that kind of crack. So that's starting next week. We did have a studio. We had big plans, but obviously things have changed. But I suppose we see it nearly like an opportunity as well. Because there's not much, like obviously there's no golf content out there at the minute. So like it's a, and we get a few interviews off a few players and stuff. And I have an ad coming out with Rory McIlroy actually on Thursday. Should be crack. So there's plenty happening at the minute, you know.
I suppose, Conor, having to ad lib it maybe and do it from home, that's kind of second nature for you. Can you consider where you started doing these things at joe.ie? And I suppose not having a big budget, you'd be fine there.
Do you know something? It actually has kind of worked out for me in that sense where the studio and going in and using the teleprompter and all that was a bit daunting because I've never done that. It's going to want to be. It's more like a soft start, you could say, for the show. But literally, I'm sitting at my desk in my apartment here. Behind me is a green screen. There's three studio lights in front of me and a camera looking at me. So this is my studio for the next couple of weeks. So at least I can say I got promoted since I got over here. I was the presenter and now I'm the lights guy, the sound guy, the camera guy, and I'm the director. So
you're doing it all. Conor, you know, we're used to so many talented people coming from Mullingar, Niall Horan, Brezzy, Joe Dolan, but, you know, they all rely on good looks. You've that as well, but the impersonations, all that on top, but having to do it to people's face, like slagging Tiger Woods to his face, that's brave.
It is. People think it is more, like, when I'm doing a live gig, if I'm doing it in front of somebody, like, I know it's going to go down well, do you know, because everyone loves to see that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And a gig for me is nearly easier. Now, I don't know if I'd have the guts to do it in front of Ruby, but I
fair enough.
I definitely had the guts.
What am I going to do to you?
You're in Florida.
Oh, no, I'd do it over the radio all day. Okay. I just wouldn't do it to your face.
Yeah.
But so how right. do you, Conor, how do you prep for Ruby? Like, if you're just, someone says to you, right, I want you to do, what do you need to do to get into character? Oh, I think we've lost Conor.
Lost him. Yeah.
Ruby, you scared him off over the phone. It's possible.
I think he scared him off. You paint me out to be this dragon or something on the other end of the phone.
Oh, sorry.
Hard and spiky, I think, is what
when
I said earlier.
When is HR open again?
Mother Teresa here.
Getting picked on.
But it is great to see him doing so well, isn't it, lads? It's amazing.
And Marie, your point there, it's not only the impersonation, but it's like looking at that video with Tiger Woods. He's got all his, what do you call them, tics and traits. Tiger Woods at one point said, I don't say that. And you can see Conor going, yeah, you do. And he's there, yeah, I do. Actually lands on him.
Reading about him earlier, like he said, it was way more important to be funny rather than accurate. And, you know, everyone has a couple of sayings that they say, like Tiger always says, oh, pretty tough. And he highlighted those couple of lines and turned it into humour to go with it. And it was interesting trying to get, like, he'd given up on trying to get Justin Rose. And then he was doing Roy Hodgson, and his brother said to him, here, that sounds like Justin Rose. So he turned Roy Hodgson into Justin Rose. I mean, and the amount of work he was doing and plaguing his brothers.
So Conor Moore joins us now again. Conor, I was just asking you, what did you need to do to get into character to impersonate Ruby?
Well, I had to walk around with a big frown on my face there for a long time. And I was after a lot of people fell out with me. I'm a method actor, you know. What was mad was a bit like doing the golf video. I couldn't really get Ruby. Paddy Power asked me to do the video, and I'd said no initially because I didn't know enough about horse racing. And, like, for me, any of the sports I do, like whether it's GAA, soccer, or golf, it's easy to write content because I know what's going on all the time. But for horse racing, I wouldn't have really known. And the boys in Paddy Power said to give me a dig out with the script then, and I did it. and I had a lot of them down, and I couldn't get Ruby. And I remember when I was doing the golf video, I didn't have Tiger down about a week before it, and the brother said to me, he says, you have to get Tiger Woods, or there's no point. And a few people said the same thing to me about the Ruby Walsh. They were like, you can't put the video out if you don't have Ruby. And the boys in Paddy Power were like, you have to give us something. And I spent about 4 or 5 days just listening to an interview that you and Dunphy did for Paddy Power. And I was just all day, like, walking around. Yeah, look, absolutely delighted to be here. Can't wait. As you can tell, the joy is just such a love in his face. And it just went on and on like that. And after a while, I got him.
Keep going, Connor. It's like he's on the line.
I thought you got Joseph O'Brien incredibly well.
You know, it's hard to keep smiling, you know. A lot of people do say, you know, why am I walking around with a big, sad face on me? But sure, look, there's a rose when you walk around with a bad knee and a bad back. And people say, how'd you get the bad back? Was it falling off a horse? I say, no. I'm carrying Irish horse racing for the last 24 years. How would you be happy, you know?
Brilliant.
I wouldn't do it to your face, I swear. If I was there in the studio, I definitely wouldn't do it.
I love that you'll take on Tiger Woods with a golf club, but Ruby Walsh on his own, you won't go near him.
Yeah, exactly.
Ruby, does it sound like you, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say it does, actually, yeah. And I can even see me saying that. Yeah. So I can, so fair play to you, Connor, but I must say...
He's squirming here, it's brilliant.
Connor, I must say, I think your Davy Fitz is better than Davy Fitz. You know that way?
It's all about the eyes, you know, but I ain't saying a word to you, Dunica, you know. I know what you're like with the big good-looking head in you. You'd be down telling everyone in the studio, Davy's this and Davy's that. I'm only a small little fish, you know. You're more of a whale, you know, to be hitting you with your look. We'll say no more, okay? On rail.
It's brilliant.
Connor, sport and comedy, they're like the perfect mix, really, because people are so invested in sport and the characters and so emotionally invested in it, and then to throw in a bit of humour as well, it's like you just have this perfect perfect recipe to make people happy.
Yeah, you know, so it is the perfect job, because for me, like, I just love sport, and like, you're doing all these different sports stars and stuff, and then you're following these games. And I suppose when I'm doing them, some people do say, do you care what people think in terms of the people you're doing? And I definitely do. I remember at the start, I was like, oh, I don't. But then when you hear someone likes it, whether it's Joe Brawley or someone, they're like, oh, Jesus, brilliant, you know. And you're delighted to hear that. And I think if you tread the right line where you never get personal or anything, and it's just always a bit of crack. And I think with the golfers, they all just laugh at it. Like even Poulter and all them, like, they don't, honestly, just don't care. Like, you know, they're always writing to me. Like, there's one or two videos I remember thinking, I done one on Poulter seeing a psychiatrist, I remember at the Open one day, and he was like, you know, they're making a golf tournament so tough, they're trying to stop me from breaking Jack Nicklaus's record. And it was pre-recorded, but it came out the day he actually got cut from the Open on the Friday. And I asked the golf channel, I said, oh, please don't put that out today, because if he sees that, he's going to be really annoyed and think that I made a laugh at him missing the cut. And they were like, listen, it's going out in about half an hour, there's nothing we can do now. And I went out, and Poulter sent me a message, he goes, you know, after a crap day, mate, that made me laugh. Hilarious.
I was sitting here laughing at you, so saying you couldn't do me to my face, and yet you went to the Ryder Cup in Paris to take off 12 golfers pretty much to their face.
Yeah, the Ryder Cup video. Well, I wasn't actually in the room when that happened. I recorded the video, and they were obviously told that it was going to be a serious video, so they were expecting some sort of motivational speech or something. And they played the video, and that was kind of the birth of Francesco Molinari, who's become a massive character from me over here. Yeah, I don't know. I suppose when you're doing it to people's faces, once, like I say, you toe the right line, and it's a bit of a laugh, like, why not? Like, if you can laugh at yourself, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, there'd be something wrong with you. And Ruby's laughing there to himself, so I'm happy enough. Probably would do it now. Now
exactly.
That I know it's safe, I give it a go.
Yeah,
well, look, fair play to you. Connor, you're obviously doing way more than just sport, and you were at Michael Dell's, or Dell Technologies, doing a gig for him as well. Is there much difference with audiences outside of sport compared to within sport?
There is, I suppose. In sport, it's all about the slag and stuff like that. And in sort of, when you go into those other gigs, they're not really, the slag can be a bit... I don't know, even in America, maybe the slag is a bit much. I remember slagging off Michael Dell, and it kind of didn't really go down well at the time. Like, well, not that it, just no one really kind of got it. They were like, is he making fun of Michael there or whatever? But it was a good old laugh still. I remember doing it the next day. Like, you know, I ended up sitting at the table with him. And, you know, we're very sarcastic, you know, as a nation or whatever, and we're always kind of taking a mick out of each other. And I remember, like, asking him, did he want to come down to 6th Street with me? And he was like, which was like, it's like Harcourt Street in Texas, there in Austin. And he was like, no, I'm grand. I said, yeah, sure, they're doing six $2 whiskeys down on 6th Street. And he literally looked at me and goes, no, I'm okay, don't drink whiskey. And he's a billionaire.
He just didn't get it. How do you survive with that, Conor, though? You know, it just missing home, being so far away, that kind of, you know, sarcasticness, the bit of self-slagging.
The GAA.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You just have to refine your gig. I remember talking to Barry Murphy from After a Match when they met for a coffee, and he was like, the biggest thing is to know your audience. And, like, you just... most of the time, my audience is a sport audience, but I know if I walk into a GAA club, and I can just... You could sit there and just slag people off all day. Mm. And there might be much, to even think about or to write. It's just literally taking a mick out of people. While I find over here in America with the golf and stuff, I won't know anyone in the room when I walk into the room, so the material has to be a bit more, it has to be more refined, and there has to be jokes and things like that. So that's the kind of big difference. And I miss doing the GAA gigs just for the crack of it, like, you know. I usually do a few gigs when I come home, because I come home for All-Ireland. Obviously, I don't know if that'll be the case this year, but I do them for Des Cahill and a few there. I had 3 or 4 gigs over the All-Ireland final weekend last year, and they're probably the kind of highlights of my year, because it is your bread and butter and stuff, you know. Yeah. Love doing a bit of burn on the boys.
Well, Conor, we miss you, I have to say. We'd love to see some more GAA. You might do a bit from your room in Florida, because it gives everyone a great lift, and you give us a great lift here this evening. So thanks so much, and best luck over the next few weeks.
Cheers, Conor.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Conor.
Ruby,
thanks.
Great to meet you.
Thank you, Conor.
You survived. That's we all great. Survived.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Conor Moran's brilliant, isn't he?
Conor Moore, even.
Yeah, sorry. There's the spiky ball again. I would have said Conor Sketches.
I love the way Marie gives you a prompt when you have to pick up, and it doesn't prompt me when I have to pick up.
Nobody knows that, Ruby. Marie's got my back.
This is more HR issues that we have to discuss whenever RTE is open again.
You're feeling emotional about it, I can tell.
I'd say nobody feels sorry for you anyway, Ruby.
We'll find out, does Tommy Bow. Yeah, we've been chatting an awful lot about the emotional loss of sport, but what about the parents of newborns who have to keep their distance from family and friends, especially grandparents during this pandemic? We're delighted to be joined by Ulster, Ireland and Lions try-scoring machine, Tommy Bow. Tommy, how are you?
Hey, Donners, did you write that?
I did write it.
Yeah. Some intro. Fair play. You have been bored, obviously.
Congrats,
everybody's
Tommy.
On form today.
You got my name right, at least. Thanks for that. Conor Sketches will be raging.
Tommy, how's Lucy and baby Jamie? Move on, will you?
Oh, manic. Yeah, it's been a chaotic couple of weeks now with a newborn, or 4 weeks old. Jamie is now. And a three-year-old who had her birthday during the week as well. So it's actually been more full-on than anything. This coronavirus has actually had me working harder than I ever have. So bring back the rugby quick.
How's Lucy doing?
She's great. Do you know what? Listen, it's working out really well, because me being at home means I can look after Emma all the time, while Lucy looks after the newborn Jamie. So we're kind of trying to split up into different teams at the minute, and so far it's going well. But you know yourself, Donaghy, you're 4 at home. I don't know how you're doing it, because the step up from 1 to 2 for us has been a real game changer.
You know how I'm doing it. Jenny's doing everything and I'm just in the way.
I know, and this is what I kind of think. I think actually if I got out of the way, Lucy'd cope just grand. I think
totally
the fact
agree.
That I'm there, it's just making it, it's making it harder work.
You say Jenny has 4, I'd say Jenny has 5.
Yeah, Jenny definitely has 5. And wouldn't be hard to guess who's the hardest to control.
Easy now, easy. Tommy, it has been a loss though with the rugby, and I suppose you've been at the forefront of it, anchoring Ayr's coverage. Obviously stepped down for a little while at the moment. How are you coping with life away from work at the moment?
Yeah, it's difficult. Obviously with no rugby at the minute, it's hard. But I've been kept very busy at home, obviously, with the two kids. But the other thing is, Donica, is the business side of things. So I'm involved in a shoe and clothing business. And really, the way the retailers are at the minute, all the shops are closed now for 3 weeks. And there's a lot of panic setting in those shops around the country. So I'm actually wearing over 200 shops around the country. So at the minute, I'm actually trying to get in touch with a lot of them shops and actually get in touch with the government to try and help sort them out. So I'm trying to work with the retail excellence and the government to try and actually see if we can try and put something together for small businesses, because any little bit I can do to help while I'm not involved in rugby or not involved in anything else, I think would be beneficial for everyone. So I'm trying to keep myself busy. There's lots going on.
Yeah, we've heard that a lot, though, and like, you've been in the bubble as well, where we're always told to have stuff going outside of rugby. And to be fair to you, you've been brilliant at adapting and getting ready. But now that brings the added pressure of employment and the stress of having employees under you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, dealing with this employment issue, and certainly the new help that the government has brought in has not, you know, there's been a bit of uproar over it, because, you know, a lot of companies, if they sign up for it, or have to say they're insolvent, and there's been a lot of issues around it, and people are still just coming to terms with this whole virus and working out what they're going to do, what they're doing at the minute, and what they're going to do in the long term, because this is going to be not just 2-3 months until we can get out of isolation. This is going to be 6 months, 12 months, you know, nearly 2 years for a lot of these shops. So, but, you know, from my point of view, Donica, I'm finding it really interesting. I'm enjoying it, the whole business side of things, because, as you say, is we were in such a bubble as rugby players. Where now we're in the real world, and to get involved in this, and actually it's real issues at the minute here. So I'm enjoying trying to help out wherever I can. But at the same time, you know, there's not much really you can do when you're stuck in the house.
That is the reality of this situation for everybody. But Tommy, looking at rugby, when rugby's going to start up again, or will it start up again, or whenever it does start up again, the Pro 14 are looking like having straight playoffs. Would you think that's a good idea?
I think it depends really on how quick they can get back playing, Ruby. You know, a lot of the contracts for players are all going to finish at the end of June, but, you know, it's unlikely that players and the league will get going before, you know, at the start of June. So I hear and I hope that there's chances that we could be getting going towards the end of June, maybe July, August. And really, what format they're going to do, it's just a case of trying to get as many games as they can. It might be just a case of the top four teams from both conferences play against each other in a try, maybe like a quarterfinal. So you have a quarterfinal, semifinals, final. So at least it rounds off the competition. And then the bottom four teams try and play off for a European place. But then there's the talk whether there's even going to be a European competition next year, given that the English clubs and the French clubs have so much heat on them to try and finish their campaign. So it's really up in the air. But actually, what I'm hoping from at the minute is that it's a real break for the governing bodies and the different, you know, the different leagues to try and come together and actually try and build rugby back up again. I think it needs a real collective voice and all the clubs and countries coming together to make, you know, it might be the perfect opportunity to try something different when we get out of this bubble.
Yeah, hopefully. Tommy, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck with baby Jamie. Look after him and keep well. And you might give us the name of the website, because there's a friend of mine could do with a new pair of breeches and a gilet. Do you hear me, Ruby?
I heard you.
Listen, Ruby. Ruby's definitely our sort of clientele, Donica, not you. The old spray tan would be rubbing off on the sleeve. It wouldn't
Tommy,
look too good.
Play fair.
You're dead right, Tommy. I'm more your style, yeah. Man.
Thanks, Tommy.
We'll have to get Tommy back on again, because he's great crack.
He's good fun, to be fair.
Yeah,
Tom.
I like Tommy. Tommy siding at me against Donica. We'll definitely get him back.
That's because he's afraid of you.
And we didn't actually get a full chance to go into a potential change of structures in rugby, so we might do that tomorrow, Donica.
Oh, don't worry about it. Like, let's just have the crack.
Well, there's plenty to talk about now in
that's
the,
true.
In the rugby. So we will do that tomorrow. So there are some competition winners before we go. We have picked two. The Offaly hurling jersey, actually, from 1984 has topped the pile. And also a Waterford jersey from the 80s from Raymond Tobin. So they are competition winners. Donica, what do they win?
Super. They get a brilliant Max Sport recovery bag with the ruby ball inside it. The spiky little hard ball.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay, that's it from all of us here on Game On.
Game On 2FM.